Hi, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Go-To-Market Mentors APAC. Really pleased that Jeff Chan could join me on today's episode, Global Enablement Sales Onboarding Lead for APAC. Jeff, good to see you.
Yeah, lovely to see you, John Joe. We finally got here and here we are.
We have. And this is quite a pressing moment, I think, to talk about what we're going to talk about. You know, it's always been important, but maybe now even more so against the backdrop of what we're seeing in B2B SaaS at the moment. So could you talk about your current role and what led you to this role with Salesforce?
Yes. So, John Joe, I'm obviously part of Salesforce. I essentially look after the go-to-market onboarding here in APAC. I lead a lovely team. They're great guns and do a fantastic job of fundamentally, you know, how do we set people up for success? And when I say go to market, we specifically, it's SEs, AEs, and sales leaders. And we do it across the whole of APAC. So you've got, you know, leaders, sellers flying into Sydney, and I'm doing a lovely in-person onboarding. And, you know, if I were to sort of articulate, you know, why I'm here, it was essentially that, you know, I've been a seller for 13 years, John Joe. I've been in SaaS. I've sold franchise territories, bought up a mill. I've closed deals at last minute, and you know, I get the people upstairs sort of ringing at me. And but if I were to sort of articulate why I enjoy sales the most, it's more so the coaching and mentoring side. And as a result of me being in Salesforce, it allows me to sort of do it on a much more grander scale. And that's why I'm in this role.
Yeah, great. And how important has that experience as an IC, as a leader, been, do you feel, in terms of your, you know, being an instant hit, being credible with the go-to-market organization? Do you think it's necessary, or it was just a, you know, an added bonus?
You know, it's a fantastic question, John. I think the key word you mentioned there was credibility. You know, don't get me wrong, I have team members in my team who do not come from an ICS experience, but that doesn't negate their impact in terms of what they can do well. You know, by all means, me joining this role, it was sort of quite a natural transition for me. And if we got sellers joining Salesforce, we've got 5, 10, 15, 20 years of experience, right? It naturally lends itself where I can talk the talk. You know, like if you're going to a meeting where you're trying to close a deal or you're trying to engage with a customer to build empathy, it naturally helps when you have someone who's walked in their shoes. Yeah.
And you mentioned impact. Obviously, the impact of your organization, and it's a large one, it sounds like, has a real clear influence on the efficiency, the success of the sales organization. What I wanted to ask you is, first of all, so who owns the enablement and onboarding function within Salesforce?
Yeah, definitely. So obviously, as you know, Salesforce is a large company. And it's essentially the whole onboarding program is owned by the global enablement team. So by all means, you might have organizations where onboarding could be, you know, regionalized. And from there, you might have sort of different material and different content. But with Salesforce, it's really from a company level, bringing it down to our teams across EMEA, EMEA, and APAC.
Got it. And I mentioned before, look, it's so important now to be set up for success where, you know, we're talking about global average quota attainment for SaaS B2B reps. Between 30-40%, I think less by some estimates. What's your take on why attainment is still?
Oh, well, you know, it's sort of asking, you know, the chicken and egg problem. You know, I don't want to give a fluffy answer, John Joe, but it can be fluffy because when you think about it, there are so many factors that go into a success of an AE or a seller, right? You know, don't mind me, you know, I'm looking at my notes to my left. You know, are customers ready for the offering? You know, where is the customer cycle growth? Is it the individual rep who's not performing due to a lack of activity, right? So I think the reasons, what's more important is digging deeper into the hood to really understand. I've seen that number quite prolific in terms of about the 30-40% mark, but it's important to understand why, because businesses change, you go to market strategies change. People are different. Inevitably, you're going to get the mismatch in terms of who hits attainment and who doesn't. And it wouldn't be right for me to give a generic answer to it. There's no generic answer to it. It's got to be very specific.
Sure. There are three factors you mentioned there which could have a, you know, quite could have an impact on success, failure. Which parts can enablement and onboarding have an impact on?
Yeah. So if I were just to look at the question, you know, like enablement can do anything. You know, you can get an organization, you know, we can give you a ton of enablement in terms of product training. We can do a ton of enablement in terms of how to negotiate, right? So if I were to pinpoint what's most important is identifying the areas where the organization sees there is a need to provide enablement. And perhaps I'm coming from a background where I'm a big fan of the numbers behind things, because I do look at the numbers to see how we guide things, right? So the hard and fast rule in terms of those key areas could be the fundamentals. It could be the product. It could be negotiation tactics, right? It just really depends on what the organization identifies as the area where there's a gap.
Got it. But enablement in this particular instance, your mandate is, look, we've hired a rep here. Let's get them set up for success. Let's work within those parameters. Are they the parameters, or can enablement within Salesforce start to think about pre-hiring and the market conditions and territory setting and those kind of things?
Yeah, definitely. You know, by all means, if I were to look at what we do here in Salesforce, right, you know, it's essentially really five things. You know, how's the AE sell here? You know, can we provide them with a level of product and technical knowledge so they can become dangerous? How does the AE do their job in terms of code creation or deal mechanics, right? Is there some sort of assessment that we test the AE that they can showcase his or her ability to a pitch, right? And lastly, can the AE put it together, right? Whether it comes to sort of, can we bake in enablement very early on in terms of territory allocation or deciding where best to strategize, where to put the AE, definitely, right? It just depends on the goal, right? And the goal for me in onboarding is essentially, if I had John Joe join Salesforce next month, for example, my goal ultimately is to ensure that you close within X number of months, right? And that's my KPI. So my onboarding program is designed to ensure that I get you there.
Got it.
As a number one priority.
Got it. What are some of the biggest reasons that reps fail, minus the macro conditions, the things that, you know, we can have an impact on?
Yeah, I think it's always a bit of a question, you know, when I look back at myself, John Joe, in terms of, you know, periods where I didn't go too well, right? And I think it really funds down to not giving enough time to the process and not really knowing the fundamentals. You know, if you need to close X, how many Y opportunities is that? How many Z activities lead you into that? And I think sometimes we can get into the motion that, you know, we closed this amazing deal in the past quarter. You know, we've got the pipe here. We can sort of take the foot off the pedal, right? But as soon as you forget the process and you forget the fundamentals, that's where complacency kicks in, and that's where you can sort of, you know, get a bit of creep, right? I think that's sort of number one. Number two is, I would say, you know, not enabling yourself. You know, we all know with AI coming into place, you know, businesses are changing, high interest rate environment, things are constantly changing, right? And like what you mentioned, John Joe, it's that macro environment, right? But what doesn't change is your ability to constantly learn. So if you're constantly enabling yourself in terms of that product knowledge, you're getting better in terms of how you negotiate. This is an amazing skill that you own that can take you to the next level, right? Third point is very important. You know, I think it encompasses a lot of the questions that you asked me prior about rep attainment. You know, does it lend itself to quota allocation, right? But you don't have to work by yourself. You know, I think we all know that, you know, when you close that $1 million, $2 million deal, you did it as a team. And I think a lot of times sellers might go into a situation where, you know, it has to be me. I have to go out there and close because it's really on me. By all means, it is an individual target, right? But you've got a whole team who you can work with for you to improve. And I think the whole, you know, I think there's a Johnny Walker slogan where it says you don't have to walk alone. It's so true. And I think people miss those sort of three key things, John Joe.
Right. So could you talk us through what the onboarding program looks like? We had recent hire, Sam, you know, just comment there and say what a great onboarding experience he had. The touch that you gave was just, you know, really special. I imagine he started really well. Could you just talk us through what the ultimate playbook looks like in terms of timeline and the things going on from first day to month three that your team is facilitating?
You know, I think what's most important is that when I go to, when any new hire comes to Salesforce, you know, the first thing I would say to them is that you need to guard your time. Because if you've got 1 month, 2 months, and then that third month, your ramp and then your quota kicks in, right, you're never going to get that onboarding experience back. So the first thing I would say to any sort of successful sort of onboarding journey is that you need to allocate the time to prioritize, and you need to get that alignment from your managers, from your team workers, that this is my time to onboard. And, you know, like I said to you in a previous, you know, previous question that you raised about what is that ultimate playbook, it's really those sort of five things, you know. Like, it was a great question for me to think about it, right? Like, how does the AE sell here, right? Like, what's the sales methodology of organization X? You know, what is the...
Sorry, Jeff, just jump down. So what do you guys prescribe as a methodology at the moment?
Yeah, so R1 is basically a combination of, you could say it's Sandlot, you could say it's sort of, you could say it's really anything, right? But if I were to give you the backbone of what I believe gives Salesforce a very unique advantage out there, is very much that key, you know, and I believe that that's that sales DNA of who we are at Salesforce. It's that ability to work as a team and to build that trust with your customer, right? And that's the sort of the underlying sort of theme that we wrap around a whole onboarding process, right? When you think about it, rapport plus trust equals the sale. You know, I think we all agree that's sort of a fundamental law when it comes to that, right? So number one, the AE who's joined your company knows the sales methodology, but more importantly, knows the DNA of how your organization goes to market. And in Salesforce's case, we really do eat our own words, is that we really do come as a team.
Got it.
And by all means, things slip, but it's that teamwork, John Joe. You know, secondly, I've only got you for, you know, two and a half weeks, right? But what can I give you in terms of product and technical knowledge so when you get out of my sort of program within 2.5 weeks, you're dangerous? And I mean dangerous in a sense that if, for example, John Joe met you in an elevator, can he deliver the proposition to you in a quick 30 seconds? So we have an assessment around that that actually feeds John's ability to make that pitch. You know, the third thing is, how do you actually close? You know, by all means, you're an absolute machine when it comes to the whole negotiation and influence thing, right? But how do you actually put that deal into the CRM? You know, how do you raise special pricing, you know, conditions that you want to see? Because you want to align the opportunity to when the customer can buy in terms of their, you know, financial plan or whatnot, right? So that's very much, how does John do his job? You know, number four, we obviously talked about the assessment. You know, it's all talk in terms of product knowledge, you know, the sales methodology, you know how to do the job, right? But can you relay it where it really matters when you're in front of the customer, right? And I think, you know, in our case here at Salesforce, you know, we are very lucky. You know, it's very fortunate for us that the fifth point is, if we bring it together, we put you in a team, can you deliver when we put you through a simulation? You know, kudos to Sam in the sense of, you know, him and his team did a phenomenal job in terms of, here is a sort of a case study. How would you go about pitching our products? And if I get back to sales DNA here at Salesforce, how do we work as a team? And how do we ensure that how we sell as an organization pretty much mirrors the buying process of the customer? So that's the ultimate top five.
Fantastic. Thanks, Jeff. It makes a lot of sense coming into an organization as large as Salesforce that your ability to form those internal relationships, understand what the buying process looks like internally. How do you make a sale? I know that sounds, you know, straightforward, but it's often more complex.
It's right. Very clear. Yes.
What about the flip side? So how that might be different if you're joining a startup, and what advice could you give to somebody that's joining a startup that doesn't have an enablement function in APAC? How are they going to, number one, assess whether they're going to be set for success? Number two, if they're going to manage it themselves, what are some of the things they could be thinking about?
Yeah, definitely. If I were to give you empathy, prior to Salesforce, I was actually the second sales hire for Freshworks in APAC. So I was the second guy on the ground in an office in Macquarie Park, ready to go. And I said, you know what, John Joe, where's the enablement? And the general manager at the time goes to me, Jeff, we've got nothing, but maybe there's a pool's table on the corner. So I think the caveat, John Joe, is that it's a different game, buddy. I can tell you that it's so fascinating to come from Freshworks, where I was on the ground where we had nothing, to Salesforce, where we literally had everything, so to speak, right? So in a situation when I have someone asking me, Jeff, how do I actually create the enablement for myself in a startup, I'm like, that's at the fundamentals, right? I say this a lot because what is the motion of your company to sell? Because if you're a startup, do you have a sort of a foolproof method where you can acquire X number of customers based on prior Y input? It's a tough job, right? If you're in a startup where you're selling and trying to do enablement, it's a tough job. But when we have to talk about those ties in terms of the ultimate sort of onboarding playbook, ask yourself, if you're the first or second on the ground, what type of methodology do you want to apply? When you go out into the market, what is that sort of specific DNA that's going to allow you to make the sale, right? Number two, what are you going to do to enable yourself in terms of understanding the product offering that this new company is trying to put into the market, right? Number three, when you do land a big customer, how will you actually put it into the order book and get it recognized at the end of the day, right? Number five, okay, you're the first or second hire in this startup. How would you then assess yourself to prove that you're willing and able to pitch your offering to a customer? Is there some sort of assessment that's going to go to you? Yes, based upon past success. And obviously, number five, you've nailed the methodology in DNA. You've put and pat the product offering in terms of you knowing what it needs to do. You know how to sell, have it recognized. You know how you're going to assess yourself in terms of how you pitch. And then lastly, how are you all going to bring it all together? And in your case, when you're the startup guy, bringing it all together is literally you hitting the phones and doing it on the ground, right? Because you don't have a customer base, right? So it really comes to that sort of top five. John Joe, if you can identify it.
Right. And in terms of the people that are coming through the program, they've been onboarded, they're now in market, they're selling for you guys. What are some of the things that they're overcoming at the moment, and how are they overcoming those challenges? What are the best reps doing right now?
Yeah, definitely. I think, I would be amiss if I didn't sort of mention the whole AI sort of buzzword. I think every sort of company out there is sort of asking themselves, what can AI do for me? And I think the best reps, regardless if it's AI, regardless if it's some new wave that it's hitting the market, it's actually a luxury for me to be in a position where I can see reps across the entire APAC, not just here in Australia. What is that sort of secret sauce? And what I've identified, John Joe, is that they listen, but in a way that they see around a corner that can basically dismantle any foolproof company plan. Now, what I specifically mean by that is that I've seen AEs out there, no matter their environment, yes, it's quite challenging, but to say it wasn't challenging 5 years ago, right? They're very good at seeing around the corner. So they're providing a unique insight to the C-suite about how their offering or organization or even themselves can offer value. That's number one. Number two, we talked briefly about fundamentals of sales, that rapport plus trust equals a sale. These people are literally people. When they go into a conversation, they're not an AE. They're not, I'm the AVP of so-and-so. I'm not the sales director. I'm just John coming to you to chat about how we can deliver value for you. So that's the whole people element. Number three, I'm sure we've heard of this old adage that emotion creates motion. Now, if I can't get to you on a personal level, and I can't get you to sort of feel that pain, are you really going to move? So they're very good at creating the emotion in the buyer, because it's the emotion that's going to create the motion to move the deal forward. Number four, they're very confident, but they do it in a very humble way. Bit of an oxymoron, isn't it, John Joe? You're confident, yet you're humble, right? Now, the reason why I say that is that there is no $0 month. Now, if you've got a quarter to hit and you've got X, you're going to ensure that every month that rolls by, you close something. Because you do know that as a seller, you need to motivate yourself. You need to get that runs on the board. And it's a typical formula where, you know, we're going to be closing those sort of large whale dudes. We need to keep a bit of a runway position for my book to keep ticking, right? So they're confident. They're confident in knowing that, you know, this is what I need to do, but they're humble enough to realize that it's the process. It's the fundamentals. It's the activities. So they go hand in hand, right? And last but not least, John Joe, it's the differentiation, right? Your outbound email looks like 15 other vendors trying to sell the same thing. Why should I listen to you? I'm not. They completely turn it around to get someone to buy. So it's been lovely, John Joe, to think about this very clearly, given the amount of people we get joining here in Salesforce, of course, I think.
Yeah, it's an interesting take, because it sounds like obviously the Salesforce machine is very successful, but what you're talking about is the best reps are able to take those resources, the process, and then upskill, you know, use a combination of their characteristics, skill, knowledge, apply personal touch, which might be quite unique, and bring all that together. So that's really interesting. Now, one thing you did push on was seeing around the corner. Now, the other things you mentioned, I get it, skills, knowledge, process, all things you can learn. But this concept of seeing around the corner, why are some reps able to do that and others aren't?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think I know, you know, personally from myself, and I know personally from conversations I've had with these sets of AEs, they really do love what they do, right? Wow. And, you know, I can give an example of an AE in the Philippines, for example. You know, she is absolutely obsessed with AI and how it can be a transformation process for the organization. And it's just the fact that since she has that personal interest, she spends so much time reading about it, right? And it's like in life, John Joe, you know, like if you like what you do, you know, that's going to give you that competitive edge, right? And I think, you know, no fault of their own in terms of how an AE approaches it, right? But you can really tell the ones who, you know, sometimes, John Jay, we joke around a bit, you know, you see in LinkedIn and that you see those titles about, you know, helping businesses transform with XYZ, right? You really do meet those people who are so passionate about that area. And when they come out into the market with that confidence and humility, it just stands out.
Yeah,
and you can sort of see that passion too coming up too from my end too. It's in terms of seeing that
you're actually providing value. You know, they're providing for the most part free value to customers in an area that they're really focused on. They're really specialized in. And by the way, you know, we also have a product that can help you with that. But it seems almost secondary. They're really providing value. They love doing that. That seems to be common.
Yeah, but when you think about it, John Joe, like, anyone can get that white paper. Anyone can download into that sort of industry piece, right? But what's unique about that salesperson, John Joe, is that he or she has just sort of taken it to another level. That is just something that is unique. That in particular, place of that person in the Philippines, she brings to the table.
Do you think the persona of the Salesforce has hired traditionally in the past has changed to what it might be now, bearing in mind when there was less market saturation? It might just be a case of if you could do the right things, you could run by the process, you could just take up this Salesforce offering, do really well, get out to market and be really successful. Whereas now when you're talking about, you need to be a little bit more unique, you need to be seen around the corner. Do you think that profile has changed and it might be a different kind of person that Salesforce hires today versus...
Yeah, definitely. I think for me, Jonjo, obviously I've only been here for a year. You know, I'm very thankful that I've seen the changes from a year. But if you don't mind me, Jonjo, if I were to overlay it with my own career, because that obviously spans a bit longer as opposed to Salesforce, I think the notions and characteristics of what makes a great seller, I think fundamentally hasn't really changed. What changed is that if you do have something like AI, for example, you may be leading towards those people who may be more adept, perhaps, in understanding a bit more about it. But at the same time, you know, if you're someone who can leverage the team around you, it doesn't really matter, right? But to get to your question, I can only comment, obviously, in the past year I've been here, right? But I think it just varies, Jonjo. I think it varies between what does a sales manager want for his or her territory. It's quite a unique situation, I believe.
Sure. And 30 years and counting, what would you say the best salespeople have in common?
They know how to build rapport.
Yes, sir.
When you look at it's a people business, isn't it, Jonjo? You know, I'm talking to you, and you know, I'm very thankful, you know, Jonjo. If you didn't like me, for example, I don't think I'll be sitting here right now, right? And I think when you take that fundamental element of if you can have a salesperson who can literally build rapport, I mean really build rapport, the adage that you buy from people who are like you, it's a thing that's going to stay with us, you know, indefinitely, right? Because what we do here as sellers, you know, maybe I'm putting back on my seller's hat, it's a people business, isn't it, at the end of the day, you know? And it's that ability to build rapport and trust, you know, it's something that's been ingrained in me when I went through some interesting onboarding programs in my past, that rapport plus trust does equal a sale. And you know what's interesting, you know, like trust is the number one value that we have here at Salesforce.
Yeah,
cool. It works out quite well. Yeah.
Last thing I wanted to ask you, just on that notion, Jeff, how do you think we assess for that? So you're saying the best salespeople have the ability to build relationships and build rapport. What's the best way of assessing to find those best performers?
Yeah, I think it's a good question, buddy. I'm going to have to think about it. But if you were to ask me on top of my head, and you're actually giving me an idea, right? If I were to try to measure the qualitativeness of building relationships and rapport within a customer, within a team, you've actually given me an idea that, see, what we do with Salesforce is that we have a week, Jonjo, where the AEs go through a simulation, right? We can definitely do a great job of seeing how that individual interacts with other people within his team and how that person interacts holistically amongst the team. I don't want to say it's being an end-all, because you're going to have people who don't like that. Maybe they do it in a different way. That's how I would do it.
And what's a simulation, Jeff? Can you just talk us through that?
So it's essentially, you know, I might go, Jonjo, you join the organization. Here is a case study of a customer that we're working on.
Mm-hmm.
He or she has X problem. How would you go about it? You know, we might have a simulation where you can actually pick certain responses that would yield, certain questions that would yield a certain response, mate, and you might get credited, right?
This is a role play.
Essentially, right? Like it's no different from us doing a role play, right? But what we do here itself quite well is that it's a very structured way of bringing together what we're trying to achieve. Because like what I said, if I bring it back to the KPI, I want you, Jonjo, to close that deal within X months. That's our goal, really, isn't it? Yeah.
Last one for you, Jeff. Advice to startups, founders, CROs in startups, maybe they're post-revenue, at what stage do you think they really need to get a sales onboarding or sales enablement specialist in the team? You define it by seats or revenue. What would you recommend?
I think as long as once, I believe that once an organization has found their rhythm in terms of how to close, so that could be a certain formula that you know works 9 times out of 10, and then therefore you can scale, you got to bring someone in. Because when you think about it, if you hit your go-to-market strategy in terms of knowing how you're going to sell right, inevitably your next stage is to bring on more people to replicate that success. When you bring on more people, that's when enablement can come in to translate your go-to-market strategy, your methodology, your sales DNA into an onboarding program.
Jeff, you've been a fantastic guest. It sounds like you're doing great work over there. And you've got a great story. You know, I love the fact you come from sales leadership and selling, you're teaching the benefits and how being onboarded successfully can have such an impact. So you're obviously doing that. Sam's already mentioned that and plenty of other reps at Salesforce. So thank you. If people out there, want to check out your LinkedIn and get some tips or find out what you're up to.
Definitely go for it. I really appreciate the opportunity, Jonjo. Obviously, with these sort of things, you sort of look at the questions and see how best to articulate it. But, thank you for the reminder as to why I'm doing this. I really do get a kick out of setting the people up for success. And if people want to come out and reach out to me, I'm going to put my hands up. I don't know everything, but you have my word. I'm more than happy to always give the time.
Jeff, you're a gentleman. Thanks so much for your help and your advice. And thanks for coming on the show.
My pleasure, Jonjo. Thank you for having me.